This week on Mac Break Weekly, Leo is still out. And while he's out, we've got the Apple iPhone September event to talk all about. We don't know what these different letters under the iPhone 10 number mean. And we also are really, really impressed by a new Apple Watch Series 4 that might help all of us to not die prematurely. All this on this week's Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 627, recorded on September 12th, 2018. Give me my darn dill pickle spear.
Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by WordPress. Reach more customers when you build your business website on WordPress.com. Plans start at just $4 a month and get 15% off any new plan at WordPress.com/MacBreak. And by Quip, the first subscription electric toothbrush accepted by the American Dental Association. Visit GetQuip.com/Twit to get your first refill pack free when you purchase any Quip electric toothbrush. And by IT Pro TV, flexible and entertaining training for your IT career. Visit ITPro.TV/MacBreak and use the code MacBreak30 to get a free 7-day trial and 30% off a monthly membership for the lifetime of your active subscription.
It's time for Mac Break Weekly. I am not Leo Laporte. I am somewhere to the left of Leo Laporte. I am Andy Iannotko because Leo is off on vacation. He abandoned our country at the time when Apple decides to drop big loads of technology on us all at once. But first, let's take a look at our panel for today. As usual, we have Alex Lindsay with us from the Pixel Core. Alex?
Hey. Well, notice how Leo leaves right during a hurricane. He's like, I think I'm just going to go somewhere else. And how does he do that?
Someplace with barges where you can have fine dinners.
Exactly.
Yeah. See, I'm on basically protein bars for the day because I'm going to be behind this microphone in one form or another for about 9 hours. So I'm not sure that's going to be. Also, filling the empty seat that is left by Renee, who is at this moment probably reminding himself of how savagely he overbooked himself for this press day, is Kelly Gamont. Kelly, how are you? It's great to have you back.
I'm glad to be sitting here. I will do my best to try to stand in for Renee. I don't have enough watch bands, but I'm going to do my best.
Do you play Pokemon Go?
I do indeed.
There you go. So we can make sure we can bring. Now, unfortunately, he usually has that conversation with Leo because Leo is also a Pokemon Go player. I can make up names of the 5 Pokemon that I think I remember. And you could just simply play along. But we need to interject that. If we can't do, we'll have to redouble. If we can't talk about watch bands, we have to talk about Pokemon Go. We will miss Renee in a myriad of ways, but maybe we can sort of dull the pain a little bit with a little bit of Pokemon Go talk and clear alcohol of some sort.
So, always a good idea.
Never a bad, so long as you're behind like a microphone as opposed to behind the wheel of a car, it's always an option on the table, I think. Elon Musk proved that it makes you more, it increases your searchability and your discoverability of that podcast. So it's something we should definitely talk about, maybe offline. So yes, Apple did have their September traditional iPhone event with kind of like a thin menu of announcements, all the stuff that we kind of expected. And not to say that those announcements were bad in any way or disappointing, but it wasn't a very, very protein filled meal for an event that lasted the traditional like 90 minutes. So before we start talking about all the Apple Watch Series 4 and the new iPhones, let's get to some more broader topics. Number one, like how did we watch it this time? This was sort of a new experience for Apple in that they allowed people who don't necessarily own Apple devices to stream it. They had some sort of cockamamie system where if you followed and liked a certain tweet from the Apple Twitter account, you could stream it through Twitter. Did we all? I watched it through Safari using picture in picture on my MacBook. Alex, how did you watch it, or did you?
We were covering it, so I watched it through whatever Twit had. I assume through Safari or from an Apple TV. So I think that's how we saw it. And you know, I think the problem Apple really had was that they don't get enough press and they don't get enough coverage and they don't get enough people watching their release. So they had to expand that market to Twitter. I don't understand what happened there.
Kelly, how did you watch it?
I watched it on my Apple TV, sitting on my awesome couch with my awesome sound system and with a friend of mine. So that was actually a lot of fun to get to watch with a buddy, as opposed to usually when I'm just sort of sitting there by myself going, Tim, what about this? Like this time I sort of had somebody else to sit with me and go, yeah, I know. So that was nice.
Yeah, it's so basically we all, despite the freedom that was allowed to us by our lords and saviors in Cupertino, we still decided to keep that yoke on and kept grinding at the Apple logoed millstone, I suppose. And another new thing, again through Twitter, was supposedly, again, if you liked a certain tweet that the Apple account that never tweets anything interesting tweeted out, they would like sort of live tweet it for you. And I did that, and I didn't see anything actually filling up my Twitter console. So are they sort of playing with us at this point? They're saying, as opposed to, here is a link that will any modern web browser will be able to stream everything live, which seems to work for every other sort of live tech event that I tend to watch. Are they basically trying to dangle this in front of us just to show us how terrible life outside the Apple ecosphere is going to be? I mean, this is disappointing.
Twitter's not really a great platform to stream on either. I mean, not for long form. So I think that Periscope and streaming to Twitter is a great platform for very fast, kind of bite-sized meals of live streaming. But I don't think that it's formatted necessarily as great for any kind of high movement or other things. So I think that was kind of an odd choice, I think, to use it. I think that one of the things that a lot of companies try to do is figure out how they're going to use this social thing, you know, so trying to figure out where YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, Snap, Twitter, all of those, how do they all fit into one place? And so I think that it sounds like Apple's experimenting with it probably at the behest of Twitter. So I think that there's probably a little collaboration there going on. But I think that it is, you know, I don't know why someone there, there are some reports that you are able to now see the stream on Chrome, if not just Safari, even if Apple's streaming it. So I'm not sure if that is, I haven't tested it myself, but it sounds like they've done a little work there. And so, but I think that for the Twitter folks, I think it's mostly trying to get out to the social network as opposed to making it available for non-Safari users. And I'm not sure what benefit that gets them because it's really something that they have probably the most viewed launch events of any company ever. so it's, you know, they're those broadcasts. I don't know what the numbers are, but the broadcasts are probably in broadcast levels. You know, like commercial broadcast levels of people watching.
And you're Captain Video. So what is there any technical reason why they could not stream it to anybody who has a device with a web browser and a pulse? Is there any advantage that they're giving viewers by making it mostly an Apple only device event?
Well, it's just the way their platform works. It's a Mac centric. It's iOS, Safari. It has to do with the HLS network. So it's, you know, that's the reason that they only do it. But I think that, as I said, there's been some rumors that other things have been going on as far as experimentation goes. But it's mostly a why should we work harder, because everyone's going to come watch it anyway. You know, I think that's the issue. It's the same thing. I mean, you know, YouTube. I mean, while it goes to lots of different things, I mean, Google streams on YouTube, Facebook streams on Facebook, you know, Apple streams on its own platform. So it's not really any different. They don't really have an upside to supporting other platforms because it's just more work. You know, and when I say that, I don't mean more work like, oh, they couldn't have done it. It's just that it's another point that could fail. It's another thing that might not work. It's another thing that might not look as good. And you're much better off if you have the opportunity to do something where you can make it great. And just pay attention to that one place that is important. Most companies don't have that luxury of saying, I'm only going to put it on my platform, because they don't have that option. So they put it on everything, and it's kind of lukewarm everywhere. Now, Apple has the ability to just say, you're going to watch it here. So I think the Twitter was most likely an experiment.
Okay. Now, Kelly, this was a really significant Apple keynote. I cannot remember, even in the days of the famous lost iPhone in the German beer hall, I cannot remember a previous keynote in which so much was leaked out of Apple, where so much of it was not just simply a good solid rumor, but absolutely, mm-hmm. We had this absolutely locked. We already seen the pictures of the new Apple Watch and side views of the new phones. There was another one this morning. Looking at Mac Rumors report. A product sitemap XML file hosted on Apple's website was shared by All Things How, including URL links that confirmed a handful of previous rumors surrounding the trio of 2018 iPhones and upcoming Apple Watch. As a matter of fact, I copied, anticipating that I was going to have to be taking lots of fast notes during the event. I actually managed to create a full outline of everything, including names, including sizes, so I wouldn't have to write down those details. Were you as hip to this as everybody else was? It was like everybody knew. It was no surprise.
Yeah, I saw that stuff come out, and I say kind of the same thing every year, which is that I'm not into it. I don't care so much about the rumors. The only time I used to care is when somebody would get, and this is the old, old days, like well before Mac OS X and all of that, when you would have somebody who would post something online and it would be maybe 30% right, and then they'd get the takedown notice from Apple. And that's how you knew, like, a tiny bit of something that you might see was somewhere in whatever it was that got posted. and I kind of miss those days because one of the things I always liked about the events is being surprised by them. Like, what's Apple up to next? What are they doing? How is this working? And what's sort of funny to me about it is that we've heard the double down on secrecy thing. And it seems like since we heard that, we just get more stuff in advance. And so, like, whether it's inadvertent or not, I mean, I know the Time Magazine Sunflower iMac thing was an accidental thing that we all weren't supposed to see the day before it came out. But in these cases, like, I sort of wonder this time around what exactly happened in that, like, there was somebody that it was like screen caps of marketing videos or something, like the product videos or something that somebody had put out on some stream, and that's how they got a hold of them or something. I don't remember. But I'm sort of disappointed. Like, I understand why everybody wants to get in on it and why everybody wants to find out about it ahead of time. And I want to know now. And, you know, I get that. But at the same time, like, for me anyway, I prefer to not have any idea and for the one more thing to be a big deal and for there to be a one more thing and, you know, that nobody knows about. And finding out what that kind of stuff is like, and at the time, as opposed to having known all of it yesterday or this morning when I was making coffee and like, oh, look, all the stuff leaked. so for me, it's kind of a bummer. But on the other hand, like, so many people care and so many people are trying so hard to find out ahead of time. Like, I feel like I should feel good about that because there was a point when, you know, there was an actual conversation about, like, if I buy this Apple laptop, is it going to be the last one that exists? Like,
yeah,
you know, and so, like, on the one hand, it's nice to have that evolution from the one end to the other. But on the other hand, like, I miss those days when things could be a surprise.
Yeah.
Well, and I think that part of it is that the supply chain is so large now and there's so much pressure that I think a part of it is keeping track of that. And it does sound like somehow the either stills or video got out from marketing. So that wasn't necessarily a supply chain issue. But a lot of these leaks are supply chain. I definitely don't think Apple is doing this, but I would point out of how much of a news cycle they're able to maintain for 2 weeks before the event. I mean, that is just an incredible amount of earned views for a product launch. I mean, most people just are kind of surprised when Samsung does its launch. So it's like, oh yeah, they did that today, you know, and for weeks before Apple, you know, this comes trickling out. Mm-hmm. I don't think it necessarily hurts Apple to have, that much of the mind space over those periods, that period of time to pay it off and make sure that you have something. I think today probably one of the bigger announcements that we didn't really see a lot of was ECG. That coming out was not something that at least I saw in some of the rumor mills. We obviously knew Apple has been working closely with the FDA. And when you think about that, that's probably what they were talking about years ago when we were talking about those meetings happening between the FDA and Apple. So they and we're talking, you know, a lot we're of the stuff takes a long time to mature.
And we'll talk about that later, but we're talking about the electrocardiogram feature in the Series 4 Apple Watch, right, which was a big deal. Can't wait to talk about that. It is weird though that this is they didn't just step on the rake once but twice, and it wasn't. We're used to the idea that as we get closer and closer to the actual event date, so like you said, so many people have to get clued in on this that it's inevitable that you're going to get some really, really good rumors that maybe you can start to believe. It is so unusual to see that this wasn't just some engineer who was drinking and a phone slipped out of their pocket and that's how it happened. It's like, dude, you put a file on a server that could be accessed by people who are not at Apple, and you named the file in such a way that if you were looking for something, they would find it. This points to me that perhaps there was a break or a leak in the system that you might want to use some of that miracle putty that they advertise on TV to patch before the next big event. But I'm with you too, Kelly. I don't really talk about or write about rumors on my own because it's not terribly interesting. You're going to find out one way or the other on September 12th. And even then, if we knew, we did know that there's going to be a 6.1-inch iPhone 10. There's going to be a couple of different models. Some models are going to be discontinued. But you need to know the context of it. You need to know the story that Apple tells around it because you can't really make a guess one way or another like that. Another thing that really struck me about today's event, it really did seem kind of padded out. There was a lot of videos. We saw the disembodied voice of Johnny Ive. I guess they're not done moving him into the new spaceship campus. They haven't gotten the white void that he usually records video from installed and completely running yet. Because you heard his disembodied voice above a couple of videos. There were a funny long Mission Impossible intro with a couple of good gags in it, and a lot of like, now we're going to recap and explain all this stuff that we just sort of explained to you already.
Like, I know that was the hardest part, was that these videos, you're just kind of like, Megan and I were talking about it on the coverage. It was just like, okay, so we're getting a video that highlights everything we were just told. I mean, there is the idea that we're going to tell you what we're going to tell you, then we're going to tell you it, then we're going to tell you what we told you. That is a classic idea. But it really felt like it was like, we're going to tell you what we're going to tell you, and then we're going to tell you it, then we're going to tell you it again, and then we're going to tell you it again, and then we're going to tell you it again. And I felt like there was a lot of over coverage of the same data.
It seems like part of the we're going to tell you and tell you again used to be like in a little different way or with a little bit of context or like with a different example. And in this case, it sort of felt like everybody's checklist was the same, which was the part that I was sort of like, I did more than one time during the coverage kind of go, you told me that already. Like, not only did you told me that a minute ago. Like, well, you know, and I'm not like, I was dazzled by it then. So now I'm like, what?
I wonder if there's a concern that, you know, a shorter event would be like, well, they didn't do very much. You know, like we're kind of used to, we're coached or not used to coached, but conditioned into thinking that an Apple event is going to be about 2 hours. And if the Apple event was 1 hour or 1 hour and 15 minutes, it might get pressed for being short, you know, and maybe not as much to say. But I definitely felt like, you know, especially when we were dealing with a lot of the stats, when they're talking about the CPU and the GPU, and I'm into CPUs and GPUs, and I wasn't interested. I was like, okay, what does that mean? I mean, it means that we're able to separate the background from the foreground. We're able to open up your apps 30% faster. I felt like we spent way too much time talking about the technical, which is what Steve always said it's not about. It's not about CPU speed. It's not about, you know, those things. Let's talk a little bit about that and then move very quickly to how does that benefit you as an end user? And I don't think they did get to that, but I just think they didn't get to it fast enough.
Part of that is that they also did it twice, I think, because we got it all with, I don't know the letters. I honestly don't care because I'm sort of mad at Apple for giving, like, once they finally establish a naming convention, then they burn it all down. And I'm kind of grumpy about that.
Yeah.
Why isn't it just an S? And an S plus, like, what was wrong with that system? People understand what that is now and what it means. And now we have the 10 3DS or BBQ or Triple X or I don't know. Anyway.
So yeah, I'm
like, on the one hand, I'm grumpy about that. But also, like, we got the new 10C. Like, it's the one that comes in colors, but it doesn't have quite the horsepower of the big one. And mm-hmm. when we got that, we went through all of the exact same stuff, as opposed to just giving me a reference of, like, just like we gave you in the 10DS, just like we gave you in the 10SE30, just like we gave you in the iPhone Air. Here, like, instead of just saying this is what it was, like, we had to get that whole breakdown a whole second time with that other phone. And I'm like, I just don't care. You told me it comes in colors. It's the C.
Yeah.
You're not going to give it that name, and I'm grumpy about it. But now you're going to tell me all of the stuff that you just told me about the previous phone about this one, and I'm confused by it.
Yeah.
Because what I wanted them to spend time on was where they were different. Like, here's how we're doing all of this with the one camera in the color one, you know, where all the other phones that do this take two cameras. Like, that's an interesting thing to me, and we never talked about it.
Yeah, it was a very hardware and gadgety, techie specific sort of demonstration. I'm surprised we didn't see more. Here is what, and by the way, since iOS 12 is going to be released on Monday, let's show you how some of these features really apply with this wonderful A12 Bionic processor. So just I'm mm-hmm. glad it's a 7-nanometer CPU. I'm really happy for you. I'm sure that you had a big cake that said 7 and M when you finished this. But show me things happening faster, and show me augmented reality that I couldn't really do with last year's model. We're going to go to a commercial, and after that we have a correspondent on the ground who is actually there on the spaceship and has actually been in the demo room and can give us some hand feel and maybe mouth feel. They still let you taste the stuff in the demo room. Maybe that's the reason why I didn't go this year. We're going to be hearing from Stephen Aquino from the Accessible podcast and wonderful tech blogger. But before that, we have a message from the absent Leo Laporte. Leo,
can I jump in here for a second and tell you about WordPress? I think it's so important to have your own site, your own home on the web, a place you own, a place you put your best content, your best foot forward. That's true for an individual, even more true for a business, right? If you're a business and you don't have a website, hey, come on, join us in the 21st century. It's time. Maybe you've avoided it because it's too complicated. I'm not a web expert. I don't want to have to deal. That's why, you know, you got to go to WordPress.com. When I needed a website, I had an idea of what I was looking for. I chose WordPress.com because there were no limits. Because it is the number one system for the web, I mean, 31% of all websites run on WordPress, it's the best supported. It's the easiest to use. I'll give you an example. I'm going to put all the images from my vacation. I'm on vacation right now on WordPress.com, on my site, leolaporte.com, which runs on WordPress.com. And I'm going to do it in an automated fashion using email. Yeah, I'm going to email my website, and it's going to post. Because that's the easiest way with uncertain bandwidth to get stuff on the website. Awesome, right? That's WordPress.com. I can go on and on. It's the ultimate online hub that you own. That's your place in the internet space. Yeah, that's a slogan. I could make that a slogan. Turn your vision into a reality. Launch your website in WordPress.com. I did. My kids have. With WordPress.com, you could choose from hundreds of designs to match your vision. Establish your brand no matter how much design experience you have. None required, okay? And it's hassle-free. WordPress takes care of the hosting, the security, the software updates. You focus on your site because that's why you're there. You're not there to become a web expert. You can upload images, video, and audio to it. Yeah, you don't have to host your video, audio, and pictures somewhere else. That's why I use it. Import and export content to and from your WordPress website. So you're never stuck. It's yours. You own it. It's your site, your home, your content. And you can grow your audience with the great tools they provide. Marketing tools like built-in search engine optimization, social media linking. With the WordPress app, you can modify and update and manage your site on the go. That's, I'm using that on vacation too, because you can use it to moderate comments. You can use it to post, but you can also use it just to check statistics. You can also launch your website with confidence because you'll get help no matter when you need it, 24/7 from the best support team in the world. These guys and gals are great. WordPress plans start at just $4 a month. It's really affordable. No wonder 31% of all websites run on WordPress. Get 15% off your new plan right now at WordPress.com/MacBreak. WordPress.com/MacBreak. 15% off your new website. Join the third of the web, practically, that uses WordPress. WordPress.com/MacBreak. Thank you, WordPress. Thank you for being my place on the net. Now back to MacBreak Weekly.
Thank you, Leo. Hey, we have a very, very fortunate guest here. Stephen Aquino is here live via Mobile Unit 1. We're going to call you Mobile Unit 1 because that's what the local newscasts usually say. You've just emerged from the mothership. Tell me, how was the event for you?
Hi, Andy. Things were fine at the event. I thought the two most important things were the Apple Watch Series 4 and the iPhone XR.
Did you get to interact with anything in the demo area? They were making a big deal about how we're going to be talking about. We haven't started talking about any of the hardware yet. We're just going over like initial impressions. Actually, what was the temperature of the room like? Were people really, really excited, or did it feel like things were kind of getting stretched out? Were people still interested even when they were showing all those videos?
I don't think so. I was in the room, and it felt like as soon as they started doing the game demos and all the videos, that people kind of started to check out some.
Yeah, I wasn't fully dressed at the start of the show. I'm wearing like, you know, a shirt over another dress shirt and a tie, and with all like the videos and all like the game demos, I had plenty of time not only to get fully like dressed out of my like usual like freelancer hanging around the house all day attire, but also to change my tie and choose a different like jacket. That's how it went. Did you get to spend time in the demo area?
Very short time. I got a chance to look at the Apple Watch Series 4, and holy cow, for accessibility, that Apple Watch is a huge upgrade.
How so?
Well, starting with a larger screen. If you're somebody with low vision, as I do, that bigger screen on which to see your content and tell time is just going to be super helpful. Also, the new fall detection feature is going to be huge for people also like me, who are prone to falling. It's going to be a huge deal.
Well, are there any other devices already, whether it's a phone, whether it's a standalone device, that gives you that kind of a feature where it can detect if you've fallen and let you easily call for help or call for help automatically?
Well, there are those standalone devices that you can use for seniors who fall. They're not exactly the same thing, but as far as anything else, I think Apple Watch is the first.
Wow. Now, is it any kind of a drag or even something worse that a watch that it can be so helpful health-wise to so many people and safety-wise to so many people still requires that you own an iPhone, or not even an iPad will do? Do you see that as a problem for people?
Well, yeah, certainly for people who might be interested in the Apple Watch who aren't interested in an iPhone. I think someday, at some point, Apple's going to have to make the watch a standalone product. I'm not sure how they do that, but certainly, you know, it's possible to not be into the iPhone, but want the Apple Watch for all the health and fitness stuff, and then you're kind of stuck.
So overall, what were your impressions about the announcements today, about anything you saw or anything that occurred to you?
Well, as I said, I think for the topic that I cover and am most interested in, I think the Apple Watch kind of stole the show. I'm very interested to check out the iPhone Max. I think the XR is going to sell well. But, you know, again, as far as what was announced, I didn't see anything with the iPhone that was really earth-shattering. It seemed like it's a typical S year, and yeah, you know, it's but you know, again, certainly Apple Watch is the star here.
Yeah, it's an S this year. It's an X year, an S year, an R year.
Yes,
I still can't get these all straight. I literally have like a note taped up to the side so I can remember which one is which, and the only one I have straight already is just XS, means that's the expensive one. That's the only way I can remember this stuff.
Yeah. XS, R, yeah, it's a lot of letters there.
Was there anything that kind of disappointed you about the event? Was there anything that you hoped that Apple would push forward on but seemed to delay, or something that they could have talked about that's coming up that they didn't talk about?
I was hoping they would talk about that air power, Matt.
Yeah.
They didn't talk about that. They didn't talk about AirPods, which I would have, you know, enjoyed. I'm going to guess, as far as, you know, anything else, there could be a second event in October, or, you know, other stuff happening. It kind of seemed, you know, kind of like a muted event for what it was, you know?
Yeah. I was kind of wondering if there was something that they, when they were first planning this out, that they hoped that they'd be able to announce, but then they realized it wasn't going to happen, and so they had to sort of fill the rest of the time. That was just an impression, but I wasn't there.
Well, it's certainly possible. They didn't talk about iPads, which, you know, they would have fit in with the whole iOS theme. But, you know, again, I guess we'll have to wait.
Yeah. We should mention the people who are listening that Stephen is being very, very generous, because he's using mobile data to Skype in here. So I don't want to like jack up your overages to about $20 or $30. Does anybody else have a question for Stephen, or anything they'd like to know, Alex or Kelly?
What are you going to get that was announced today?
What am I going to get? Well,
yeah.
I was teasing people inside that next Thursday is my birthday. So I'm definitely going to get an Apple Watch. I'm not sure about the iPhones yet. I'm going to hold out and see on that, because I have an iPhone 10 and it's fine. But we'll see. But definitely an iPhone, Apple Watch.
Well, we should let you go again so you stop burning money. But we definitely want to thank you for picking all the trouble. Like, you're literally fresh. You're in the car right now. You could not have called us any earlier. Let's definitely plug one of my favorite podcasts out there, the Accessible Podcast that you do with Timothy Buck, which people can find on accessible.fm. It's a biweekly podcast, and you tell us about it. You sell it for us.
Yeah. So I think accessibility in tech is a underrepresented topic. And I want to help kind of spread the word about how all this technology, you know, impacts disabled people. And we do a fortnightly show about accessibility in tech, which does cover Apple largely, but we do talk about, you know, other companies as well.
Well, again, thank you so much for making this time, and invoice me and I'll see what I can do about getting you some of that overcharge back. Stephen McKino, thank you so much again. I can't tell you how valuable your thoughts were. Once again, for the Accessible Podcast, go to accessible.fm. Thank you again, Stephen. This has been great.
Thank you, guys. Bye-bye.
Cheers. So what about that? Like, we didn't. No mention of the AirPower charging mat that was promoted as this. Can we call it late yet? And because the AirPower mat isn't available, that would imply that they also didn't mention the new Qi charger capable case for the AirPods. Kelly, is this a bad sign, or is this just a womp womp moment that we just move on from?
Well, for me, I would like to think that this is for more people than just me, but I have been holding off for the last month or two on getting AirPods. I didn't have any before. I'm starting to see where I could really use a pair. And I went, you know, Apple's got an event coming, and they talked about the AirPower already previously. So obviously we're going to get an update on that. And part of that update is going to be the new case. And if they're going to have a new case for original AirPods, maybe they're just going to have new AirPods. So I should wait. And they didn't say anything. And that was the thing that I sort of noticed about this particular event was the things that they didn't mention. We heard a lot from people beforehand about how iPads were going to be part of this event because they're also iOS devices. So that was the thing that I didn't see. No AirPower, no AirPods. You know, like, once you get this shiny new phone, like, you don't want to have to hold it to your face. So here's these fancy pants new headphones, and you should have them for reasons. We didn't get any of that kind of stuff. And I thought that we would see a little bit more of that kind of thing. And the reason that I wonder about it is because it wasn't even casually mentioned. It wasn't acknowledged at all. Like, this is a thing that, if I recall, we heard about the mat at the last Apple, at the iPhone 10 event.
Yeah.
That sounds like, so it's been like a year, and we've not seen hide nor hair of it from anybody anywhere. At any minute now, I expect somebody to have emailed Tim at apple.com and get some reply about the mat that maybe we could publish. Because, like, it was very odd to me that they announced it with the vaguest of dates. Like, it's totally coming. We know that. Yeah. And that's all they said. So that to me was sort of odd. And then to not hear anything about it again is even more odd. As far as the event goes and what we did see, I am super duper excited about that watch. I'm super excited. Yes. I know a lot of people who are excited about it because this may be Christmas shopping for their parents done and dusted. Because that fall sensor, like, is amazing to me, and the heart tracking information is super great.
let's go ahead and start talking about the Apple Watch Series 4. And so we saw the pictures. We didn't know whether that that really super denser display represented more pixels and denser pixels or a different design. So we find out that they've actually made the watch bigger and said it's now 40 millimeters instead of 42 and I think 38. Now it's 40. Didn't have that in front of me. Now 40 it is 40 and 44. However, they made the point that it's now thinner, so it actually displaces less liquid. So it's technically smaller than the previous generation hardware. And now the screen actually fills out more of the display, and now actually has rounded corners in every corner, so it's not a squared off display. We got a new gold tone color. The biggest thing about it is the new heart features about it. Now it has an actual ECG scanner, so that it uses it will actually get like the ECG waves from your heart. It creates a circuit with one contact is the back of the watch against your wrist. The other one is when you press a finger against the digital crown that completes the circuit. It will take about 30 seconds to look at your heart rhythm and then either tell you, okay, you seem to be in regular sinus rhythm, or say you might be in. I have it written down somewhere, but it's the most tactful way of saying, yeah, that wasn't normal. Not that you should get excited about this or any more excited, but it will tell you that I am seeing things that are not inconsistent with atrial fibrillation, and perhaps you might want to get this checked out. And it's not only cool that you can do this on your own, and this is the first, as they said, the first FDA-approved device that is simply a consumer-level device. You don't need a doctor's note in order to get it. You can just buy it and get, even if you have no reason to get an EKG, you can get EKG. But not only that, but it will save that EKG as a PDF. So you can, if you're having one of those moments where suddenly you feel a little bit dizzy or you feel like something's not quite right and you don't want to run to the emergency room for $10,000 because you feel not quite right, you can just get yourself an EKG and then remind yourself, oh, I got a checkup in 2 months. I'll just make sure my doctor sees this PDF file, and then he will tell me whether to cancel all my appointments for the next 3 weeks and start shaving my chest for a zipper job. That's pretty incredible. That's dramatic. We're still thinking it's pretty cool to get your pulse rate off of one of these fitness watches, but that kind of changes everything. Like, how did you react to that, Alex? Do you want to get one of these things, and do you think it'll help you not die in the next 10 years?
Well, I think that it actually, I mentioned on the earlier shows, my father actually had a heart attack last year, and he's fine now, but it was a close call. And I think there's an argument for me to get him, a watch for his, now I've just given up. Fortunately, he doesn't listen to the show. So he's not, you know, so he's not going to know that he's going to get for Christmas. But I think that, you know, that could be a solid solution. And that's a big market. You know, my father's generation growing into that market is a big market of folks that need to start paying more attention to how their heart's moving. I mean, we all do to some degree, but I think that that's going to be an important market. And I think it could literally, the reason it's so important is that it could literally double the sales. You know, if you have a lot of doctors saying this is what we approve, and you had the right people up there on stage talking about it, I think that a lot of doctors I could see going into this fall and going into the spring and going into the next cycle, you know, really the next phone cycle, talking to their patients and saying this is really important. And as we saw from the reports of when Apple was talking to the FDA, this is not a trivial problem. This is not a simple problem to fix. And it's going to be difficult. Of course, we know there's probably 100 patents that are related to that one little process that Apple did. So it's not going to be something that someone's going to reproduce really, really fast. And so Apple focusing on this market could yield huge benefits for the proliferation of the watch into certain populations. And so I think that it's going to be very important. It's probably the most important announcement of the day. As far as the, you know, proliferation, I mean, the rest of it is, I think that, you know, the rest of the day was really talking about, you know, incremental changes that are better. And if you haven't bought last year's, you probably want to go ahead and buy it. You know, this is probably a good time to upgrade, that type of thing. But this is really moving the whole thing forward, of really creating this. And there's just, you know, there's all kinds of opportunities. When you start talking about what it's doing as far as how it's getting what you're doing and paying attention to that and processing it, there's a lot of opportunities there. You know, as far as now, there are some losers, of course. Cardio Mobile, made by AliveCor, are probably not the most excited about this announcement.
Yeah, because that handheld device is like a popsicle stick with like two metal pads that you grab with your thumbs.
And it's a great device. I got one. You know, I was experimenting with it for some other stuff, and I have one, and it's a great little device that is completely not useful now. I mean, like, it's, you know, I don't know if it's, you know, if it's...
It's not the one you want. Apple got,
well, here's the deal. Unless they can prove that they're significantly more, and I mean significantly more accurate, which is unlikely, than the watch is, you know, they're going to have a hard time selling over that. I mean, I think that as a startup, this is a fairly devastating, you know, hit, you know, to your product, because it's something that's easy, still more expensive to buy the watch than what they have, but I think it's easier because now it's on your, anytime you have that feeling. And we had someone who used to work for us that did have some heart issues, and he had to pay attention to that all the time. And being able to have it on your wrist and being able to manage that is very, very important. Yeah. So I think that it's a pretty big thing. It's not something that I'm necessarily interested in. Most of the time when it says that I'm having an issue, I'm watching the Steeler game or I'm on a stationary bike, which, by the way, so I get these alerts about once a week from my stationary bike going, your heart rate is very high, but you don't seem to be exercising. I'm like, what do you think I'm doing here?
Alex said something that I thought was really interesting was, you said, Alex, paying more attention to your health, to like heart health specifically, but health in general. And the thing that I think is the most interesting about this is that you don't have to pay attention. So if you're somebody like me who wears a watch every day, anyway, this is an Apple Watch. It's an OG Apple Watch, so I'm super excited about Series 4. So for somebody like me who already wears a watch, like whether it's somebody in my demographic or my parents' demographic or whoever, if you already wear a watch every day, and all you have to do is get up and put on a different watch, like you already have the habit of putting one on each day anyway. So as long as you have that, you don't have to pay attention. So it's one of those things where, like, when you do go to the doctor for whatever reason, you have all that information for them. So like, hey, by the way, there was this thing I wanted to ask you about because I have this list of information in my phone of these times that something happened, or, you know, like I was feeling weird, or, you know, I recorded, like, I have these incidents where I feel really dizzy, and here's like what my heart rate looked like at that time, and let me talk to you about it because I want to figure this out. And the thing about it is that you didn't have to do anything in order to make that happen. So that's the part to me that is the most exciting about this, is that it's like the lowest amount of effort. Like, all you have to do is wear a watch, and then you have access to all of this happening automatically. And to me, that's the part that's really great. And that's also the part that's really great. If you have a parent or some other family member, a parent, a grandparent, whoever that may be, and maybe you already have a system where they have your previous generation iPhone, you know, so they have a phone that can connect to a watch effectively. And, you know, so they've already got half the technology that they need. And then for Christmas, you get them one of these watches. And now, you know, like if they fall, their watch is automatically going to call somebody. Maybe that's you, maybe it's not, but somebody's going to find out if they fall. And if it turns out that they're in a position not to be able to call for help themselves, then that call gets made automatically. And like that, for a lot of people, I think is going to be super important just for peace of mind. But also, again, you don't have to do anything to get that technology for that person. Like, you have a watch, you just need to wear your watch now. Let me show you like how to set a timer. Let me show you how to, you know, put your calendar on the bottom of it, or, you know, like I sort of hope almost that they still kept some of the simpler watch faces for people who don't want all of that stuff. Like, I look at that version 4, that Series 4 watch face, and I'm like, that's still not enough information on my arm. Like, for me. Now, for my mom,
you want,
like,
so I need... So you want like a Wonder Woman like gauntlet with like an iPhone XS basically embedded into it with 3D printing.
Yes, just make a watch strap. I'm sure Renee already has one. Make a watch strap that slides into a special modified case so I can just buckle the iPhone 10 straight to my arm, and then maybe I will have enough information on my arm. But until then, I look at that, and that seems like a good amount of information on a watch for me because of who I am. But like, my mom would probably want, you know, the time in big digital letters, and then like a button to call me, and a button to call my brother, and a button to call her sister, and like, you know, and maybe that's all.
That's one of the cool things. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, another one out of the customizable faces. I hope they're simpler, but I think that overall, like the barrier of entry for this is so low, and it gives you access to so much by just wearing your watch every day, having that heart rate of availability, like with historical data, like here's the last 6 months since I saw you last time, doc, here's what I've got, you know, that sort of stuff, like automatically, I think is going to be amazing.
Well, and I think that when we think about something they didn't talk to specifically, but I think that what we'll probably end up seeing within the next year is the idea. They said that it can see an AFib event, right? And now it can do an ECG or an EKG. They're both the same thing. And so it can do that, and they can also send it to your doctor. Now, if you tie all those things together and consider it buffering that data, you could have the watch actually see that it thinks that you're having some kind of event. It goes ahead and runs the cycle to measure that event. And then it basically brings it up and says, hey, I think you have something. I've recorded the last, you know, minute or whatever of your, and it shows something that is important. Do you want me to send this to your doctor right now? And that could be literally life-changing, life-saving for some people, where they send it, you immediately hit it, and a minute later you get a call on your watch that says, hey, this is the hospital. We're sending someone over. you need to come in right now.
This is what's so exciting about these health features, that so much of it just, it's not like the first generation where if you want your pulse rate, you have to tap through the absurd series zero watch its interface to get to that thing and then get a pulse rate. It is always checking your pulse, and it's saying, it's giving you a notification that, okay, your heart rate is kind of really low. I just want to give you a notification about that. And also, again, taking these ECGs on a regular basis, giving you sort of a heads up that there's something you might want to take a look at, or this is not normal for you. And the other thing I hope this doesn't sound too ghoulish, but the value of this data, when you have hundreds of thousands of people that are getting just day-to-day samples of what is normal for them, we're going to have a valuable cache of research information where we have, when people drop dead of a heart attack, they're usually not strapped up to an EKG machine. And they're usually not strapped up to a bunch of patchy sensors glued to their chest. But in addition to helping people who are having events survive those events, it can collect I wonder if there's going to be a black box mode to it, where when this person dies, here is the data that was collected up until the moment that his heart stopped, and here is everything that was happening when we started noticing that this was an event that was happening, and will that be available to researchers?
I think that one of the things that's interesting there is that why Apple's conversation about privacy and their conversation about the anonymization of the data. So they've really talked a lot about how the fact that they basically encrypt the data, they disconnect all the personal information, and then send it out if you're part of a study like that. So if you have people that are in high risk factors. And of course, they're not going to talk about that the first time they talk about an EKG. You know, we're releasing an EKG. It's great. They're not going to talk about the fact that if you die, we're going to send you all the data. You know, but I could definitely see 6 months, a year, year and a half. They kind of, you know, it's like kind of like sneaking up on a horse. You got to move like you're not moving. So anyway, I think that where they're going is definitely what you're talking about, which is that there is so much data about issues around those that we're going to be able to see and be able to actually give people more warning further ahead of time that might save their life because of the data that we're getting from that. But that requires everybody to trust you that the data is not going to be connected to them, where it affects their insurance, it affects, you know, all their job growth, it affects all kinds of things. But explaining that, I think, is really important. I also think it's important that Apple is focusing on a very different market. When we think about focusing, you know, their main competitor, I would say, is really Fitbit, right? And Fitbit is really pointed towards a fit first population, and the iPhone, the Apple Watch is, you know, if you're fit, it's important to you as well, but it's also really inclusive of this less than fit you know, population that may need some of the more important pieces of that puzzle. And that market, at least in the United States, is much larger than the Fit market.
Yeah. Yeah, they did make a big point of saying about how data is encrypted on the device itself, and yep. It falls under Apple's mm-hmm. larger privacy guidelines. So again, if the insurance company did want to offer Apple a bushel of money, if they are taken over by jerks who want to sell it, they wouldn't even have the ability to do that. But there's just so much cool stuff here. I'm just going to go through just a couple of details before we get to the big question that I'm kind of worried about now.
Before you do that, Andy, I want to put forth a theory. I have a crazy theory. And right now, that theory is for the Apple Watch, what they're doing is with the EKG information and the heart data, that's just reporting. Like, that doesn't influence anything that you're doing. It doesn't change if you have some sort of condition. Like, the Apple Watch isn't changing that. It's just reporting on it. And Apple went through the FDA. And my theory is that part of where this started, or part of the reason that they started with the heart stuff and not the first thing I assumed that they would go with, is, you know, something for blood sugar monitoring, is because this doesn't change anything. It's just reporting. It's not intrusive. And so part of the reason they went through this for FDA approval and to make sure that it was, you know, sort of legit as far as like a medical device that is measuring your heart rate and that sort of thing, is to have gone through the FDA exercise so that they can get into something that I guess technically would be intrusive. You know, if you're talking about like, I need to have more insulin, or, you know, if I need shots for something, like because I'm diabetic, getting more into that market. So my hope is that that's where this is the first step down that road, where blood sugar monitoring can be a thing that happens in some fashion, or you know, you can get an alert like your blood sugar is really low right now. You know, you might want to look into that. So that's my hope, and that's a theory I'm putting out there now. I'm sticking a flag in it.
Yeah, I'm sure that it wasn't just the technology that the FDA ran a fine tooth comb through. It was simply the nature of the notifications that it provides the user, that it can't say you seem mm-hmm. to be having a heart attack right now. It can only state the facts that my sensors indicate that your pulse rate is lower than it was before. That is a fact and not a medical opinion. And correct. I'm going to collect that information so that someone who actually has the brain and the eyes and the ears can translate that into something more interesting. They're promising that you get the same 18-hour all-day battery life. You can have a 6-hour outdoor workout if with the GPS on all that time. I thought it was nice that it's now got Bluetooth 5, which is the same Bluetooth radio that the iPhone 10 has had, and which means that a lot faster, many times the distance. You can connect more devices to it at once, or and maintain a log from it. That's a lot less power. Starts at $399 or $499 with cellular, and they're keeping the Series 3 on the price list at $279, thus making it pretty price comparative. But here's the big question. I've asked it before, and now I'm asking it even more urgently. At this point, is it almost unethical for Apple to say you have to own an iPhone or else you don't get any of the benefits of this watch? We're not going to let you pair it with a MacBook. We're not going to let you pair it with an iPad, even though it works just great when you don't on your wrist, just simply as a data collection tool, as a timekeeping thing, and something that can communicate with your home Wi-Fi and maybe give you those alerts and give you those emergency contacts as you go. I really wish that Apple would explain why you need to own an iPhone, other than, well, conceptually, we wanted to partner with an iPhone because that's, you'll have the iPhone in your pocket and the watch on your wrist. But as listeners are disgusted with my repeating, I am an Android user, but I'm also an Apple Watch user. And because it's my favorite fitness watch. It's really, really cool. Apple even said that this is the best-selling watch of any kind of watch out there, not just fitness watch. It is a cool, cool watch. And the great thing is, when you don't have it like paired, when you don't have it tethered to your phone at all times, I keep it in airplane mode, and I get days and days and days worth of battery life out of it. Meanwhile, it's still like giving me my rings. It's still telling me the time and giving me basic features. At some point, don't we have to ask Apple if this has such great potential to improve people's lives, extend people's lives, aren't you sort of obligated to at least open it up so that people who don't maybe have an iOS device but not necessarily a phone can use it, or even people who have just simply a Wi-Fi signal inside their house, and that'll be good enough for the user to be able to download software updates, install apps, communicate with the outside world. It saddens me that they're not doing the same thing with the Apple Watch that they did with the iPad and the iPhone and the iPod, which is to say that we're making this device for everybody, not necessarily as a way to get people more locked into the Apple ecosystem. Am I being a curmudgeon here? I can be a curmudgeon and have a point, but what do you think, Alex?
I think that they had the same pattern in earlier ones as well. When we first got our iPhone, you had to plug it in, you had to do all this stuff, and we were like, why can't we just untether the iPhone and you know, just let it update? And eventually they got to the point where you could do that. And by the way, if you don't, as I have found, if your kids forget all their passcodes, you really wish you had synced to the computer. I'm just saying. So I think that I think that has less to do with any kind of business end of things and more to do with the user experience of, you know, people having a good experience with the phone. With the watch, is that the easiest way to update it, the easiest way to make it useful from Apple's perspective is probably what they want is that the people who got the watch have the highest value of that have it. They're not as worried. They have a lot of people who have the phone, and so I think that they're less worried about people who don't have the phone. I will say that while you like it, I bet you that I generally view Apple's view of product development just from the outside as, what will 90% of the people want to do 90% of the time? If you're in the 10%. Or doing something that only you want to do 10% of the time, Apple's probably not for you. That's why a lot of power Android users are power Android users, is because they want to do things that live in that 10-10 range. And I think that Apple really focuses on it. And I bet you there's less than 10% of the people who have Apple watches have something other than an iPhone. I'm willing to put money on that.
This is just something that I feel. This is not a thing where that 90-10 thing, which makes sense in so many ways, I don't think it really applies here, because now I got as my general practitioner, every time that my GP who I get my physical from every 2 years was also my dad's GP. And so usually, like when we talk about like long-term healthcare, he uses the phrase, well, your genes absolutely suck, because he knows my dad's history and my grandparents' history, and heart attacks getting people by in their mid-50s is part of that wonderful mix that we call the Anatco gene assortment. I had actually sort of set aside some money to like upgrade my 2 or 3 year old like Moto 360 Android Wear smartwatch, which I love, and I'm really excited about the next generation of hardware that was kind of semi-revealed a couple of days ago. But I really was as easily tempted before to replace it with a new version of the Apple Watch. And with the Apple Watch Series 4, I'm even more tempted, because, again, there are times where it's not like I smell toast and I lose my color vision for 3 seconds and it comes back on again. I'm talking about, I just felt a little bit dizzy for just about a second, and I don't know whether it's because, you know, I got up too fast or something like that. It would be kind of cool to know, to basically, if there's to have this little watch, this little thing watching over me, not for my entire like heart health, but at least looking after a certain part of it, and at least collecting data that can be used to avoid my getting the zipper in the middle of my chest. And this is why I really would like Apple to find a way to accommodate people who don't necessarily have an iPhone. I have an older iPhone that I keep synced to my existing Apple Watch for the purpose of keeping it up to date and making sure the time is synced when the battery goes all the way down to flat. But I think that's an artificial thing that they're putting in there. And if they really do think that this is such a brilliant device that will help people's health, I think that it's worth their investment to extend it to people who are outside the ecosystem. I have blathered on. Kelly, what do you have to say?
Well, the most generous explanation I can come up with for it is that They are saving people from having to spend any more time in iTunes than absolutely necessary. Because remember, my fondest wish from any Apple event is that Tim Cook comes out on stage with a big sack of paper and says, this is the iTunes source code, and he turns to his left and feeds it to a wood chipper. This is my fondest wish. This is my fondest wish. A close second is that at 10 minutes to the hour, everyone in the audience stands up and swings their arms for a second because they've got a move ring that has alerted them. But anyway, that's beside the point. I think I agree with part of what Alex was saying, which is that I think they're going to get there. I think part of it is that the watch is new and it's harder to make it self-contained for over-the-air updates. I think the advent of cellular to the watch is part of what is going to make that possible. Just like over-the-air updates on your iPhone were a thing that we didn't get for a really, really long time. And I think it's just a matter of the evolution of that. And secretly, I'm sort of glad that they're not doing that. For another crazy theory that I would like to put out there, because I thought about this before when I was having an issue updating my Apple Watch, is why can't I just plug it into iTunes? Why do I want to plug it into iTunes? Well, I don't. But maybe part of, like, down the line, we're going to get what I've thought we've needed for a long time, which is a separate store application on macOS and a separate backup application on macOS, like something that sort of works hand in hand with, like, image capture. Like when you plug in your phone and image capture pops up so that you can take all the pictures off your phone, that we also get a backup utility that works a lot like the image capture stuff does, and that maybe we'll get one for the watch. And then you download the watch utility if you need it. You know, it's part of macOS. It would be free in the App Store if it's a thing that you need. If you don't need, don't worry about it. Just like you do on the phone now. And so my hope is that at some point when they do break iTunes apart and build it all up again for the future, that's a part of what happens, so that the watch can be a little bit more autonomous. And if they use whatever that technology is that they're using, then it would also work for people who are Windows users. Or people like you who are Android users. And so it takes the phone out of the equation a little bit. I think they need to figure out the rest of what it's going to take for the watch to be a self-contained unit by itself without having to, you know, beam the health information back to the phone or, whatever that kind of stuff is. Being able to manage that internally and then be able to shuffle that off to another device, whether it's a computer or a phone, maybe you'll get an option. To figure out how to do that effectively so that that's information. Like if you needed to restore a backup, that's a thing that could happen for you.
Yeah. We have to move on. But I'll just say that the Apple that I've created in my mind, which may or may not have any intersections with the actual Apple, wouldn't just say, well, look, we're selling the number one most popular watch of any kind in the world. You really can't improve upon that. Why wouldn't it be better for us to put our resources into adding more health features to the watch rather than just simply redoing it so that the software will work with Android or the software will work on iOS or something like that? I just hope that it occurs to them that they've got something that is much more valuable than a gadget watch or a fashion watch, which is what they showed with the Series 0. This really, the Series 4 really is the culmination of a lot of really great positive thinking. It's been marvelous to watch this product evolve. We're going to go back to Leo Laporte, probably on a barge, probably being fed grapes one by one by somebody with our next message.
Let me interrupt you guys to talk a little bit about dental health and Quip. One of the most important things we do for our health every day, and we're learning this more and more, is brush our teeth. Yeah. Really has a lot to do with health overall. Most of us are not doing it right. That's why Quip is here. Q-U-I-P, designed to make brushing your teeth more simple, more affordable, even, dare I say, and enjoyable. It's a better electric toothbrush created by dentists and engineers, sold direct to you so you save. Quip's sensitive sonic vibrations are gentle on your sensitive gums. In fact, you know, people don't know it, but a lot of people brush too hard. And many electric toothbrushes are too aggressive. Quip's not. It does exactly what it's supposed to do. And a built-in two-minute timer pulses every 30 seconds, so you do what you're supposed to do, switch sides, helping to guide a full and even brush. I love our quips. We actually got quips for travel for our vacation. His and her quips. Yeah, because I don't need a charger. It's really much more compact. They're inexpensive. Start at $25. They just use a single AAA battery, so it's perfect for travel. And the cover, I love this, is a great way to remind yourself to brush. Kids, it's good for kids too. It can mount to your mirror, and then it unmounts to slide over your bristles for on-the-go brushing. It declutters your sink or cabinet, makes traveling easier. And we actually have extra quips at home for sleepovers. Because you know what? It turns out teenagers, when they come for sleepovers, they don't bring a toothbrush with them. It's okay, kids. We got your toothbrush right here. See, it's got your name written on it. Brush heads automatically delivered on a dentist-recommended schedule every 3 months. Just $5, including shipping. 3 out of 4 of us use bristles that are old, worn out, or ineffective. Quip is one of the first electric toothbrushes accepted by the American Dental Association. Thousands of verified 5-star reviews. I give it 5 stars, 2 thumbs up, and a big, bright smile. I love my Quip. Backed by over 20,000 dental professionals. And, yeah, it just starts at $25. Lisa got the silver, I got the copper. That's how we know. And we'll have them both glued. Not glued, not permanent, but adhering to the mirror in our cabin. So you don't forget to brush, and it's right there. And, you know, actually, you know, when they're coming and they clean the room, they always are moving my toothbrush. And so I don't like that. I this way, put it on the mirror. It's there. It's out of their way, and I always know where it is. Quip, Q-U-I-P. You can go to getquip.com/twit and get your first refill pack free when you purchase any Quip electric toothbrush. Getquip.com/twit, GETQUIP.com/twit. First refill pack free, getquip.com/twit. Ding. My smile is bright as I travel through the night, thanks to Quip. Now back to Mac Break Weekly.
Thank you, Leo. And I have to admit that I've been on the go since literally 10 seconds after waking up this morning, and I didn't brush my teeth this morning. Perhaps if I had a pocket-sized Quip toothbrush that would allow me to brush on the go, I would not be the filthy semi-adult that whose stinky breath appears before you right now and right today. Okay, let's go on to the new iPhone X. I wouldn't say that it was a remarkable update. Here's what happened. They took the iPhone X of last year and they did two things to it. They gave it the nominal incremental upgrade that we often see in an off year, with matching the same prices and keeping the same, like, sort of prestigious surgical stainless steel, as was said during the keynote, and the wonderful OLED display, screen to screen, and upgraded the processor and all this sort of stuff. That was nice. They also added a new, in addition to the 5.8-inch screen display that has on the regular iPhone XS, S, so we don't say XS, 5.8-inch.
I think that they 2. I think they go ahead. They want you to say 10S.
Yeah, I see. I see. Apple's. Let's have a sidebar here. I think Apple has lost its product naming mojo. I mean, I think we're all old enough to remember the day when it was possible to buy a Macintosh Centris XL747. That's different from the 745 because the 747 was a label exactly for the Sears stores, and the 746 is the one that was available at Office Max. And so now we're dealing with, we got the XS, which is the super expensive. That's how I'm remembering it. It's the XS, super expensive. That's the $999 phone. They have added the 6.5-inch XS Max. That does not roll off the tongue, I will tell you that. And now the top price. In addition, one of the many features in a very long and technical rollout of this device during the keynote of the new A12 Bionic processor is that now this can address a whopping 512 gigabytes of storage. So if you want to get the most amount of the largest amount of money, if you're really just there to make sure that by the end of the year, you've spent as much of your expense account as you possibly can before it rolls over, you can buy a 512 gigabyte iPhone XS Max for $1,449. If you're going to cheap out the XR, the smaller version will max out at $1,299. So you've got the XS, the XS Max. Underneath that is the quote-unquote budget version of this, the XR, which they cut a few corners. Instead of getting stainless steel, you get aluminum. Instead of getting an OLED screen, you get a LED display. But this is Apple, so they have to tell you it is a liquid retina display. One of the most amazing LED displays ever shipped. They'll be shipping a month later. And that one is going to be less expensive to the tune of starting at, I believe, $799. Were both of you a little bit confused? And are there little birdies just sort of tweeting in circles, cartoon-like, around your head, trying to keep all of these things straight and their features?
Mostly, I'm confused why you keep calling it an iPhone X. It's a 10.
Because it's 10. It's the letter X. Okay, it's the letter X. If they wanted to call it the iPhone 10, see that was the iPhone 8 called the iPhone like VIII? It was not. It was called the iPhone 8.
No, it was not. 8. So you don't call it the iPhone VIII. You call it an iPhone 8. This is the
if they wanted it to be the iPhone 10, they would have had a 1 and a 0. They put an X, so they wanted me to call it the iPhone X. And also X is cooler.
The best Star Wars movie is not Episode V. Andy,
Patrick Stewart does not play 5. Professor 10. He plays Professor what? X. I rest my case.
Okay. And what operating system does your computer run? Because it's not OS X, sweetie. I love you, Andy, but you're calling it an X and it's killing me.
Well, I think that's the OS 10 is where this all came from, because we all knew that it was telling us that we were moving to Unix. And so it was like OS. So to us, it was like OS X, because it's like Linux. It's like Unix. It's like, and so all of us just kept on saying OS X, you know, not all of us, but many of us did. And it just seems silly to call it OS 10. I think that we've just never really gotten out of that habit of like, when we see that, I know that they say 10, but we're going to just keep saying X. So
it bugs me, and part of the reason that it bugs me is because like it never got broken from the OS 10 stuff, you know, back in the day. You know, it's 10.14 now, and we still call it. People are getting away from that by referring to everything by the code name, so that they don't have to worry about is it OS X or OS 10. The thing that I don't like about it is that all of a sudden we've got all these weird naming conventions that we didn't have before. And I don't mind that they want to come up with their own naming conventions, but don't spend 10 years giving me naming conventions and then burn them all down. That's the part that I'm sort of frustrated about. Like the last time we got an iPhone that came in colors, it ended in C. It was the same phone, but the backs were colored. So if you bought one that was a different color, it was the 5C instead of the 5. All the other stuff was the same.
It's a mnemonic device. It's a handy mnemonic device.
Right, that too. So I was like, oh, so this is the 10C. No, it's an R. We're not going to tell you why we called it R, because remember the S always used to stand for different stuff on the other phones. Like the S was for speed, and the S was for Siri, and the S was for other things. You know, they always said like this one is the S model because it's got this other thing. And this time they're like, it's R, and we're not going to tell you why. Like it's just an R now, and we're going to call the other one 10S, and we're not going to have a 10S plus. We've conditioned you for years that the big phone is the plus, but no more. Like now we're going to call it Max. But next year, like, are they going to have an iPhone 5, or does everything start with an X now? Like all of the rest of them are going to be 10 models from here forward, and we're never going to get an iPhone 9. Like, I mean, we never really got an 8, because it's actually the 7S, even though they put it out of its misery today. The thing about it that I don't like is that on top of the naming convention being super confusing, now additionally, we have the fact that they're selling 7 different models, because they're still selling the 7 and the 8 and the 7 Plus and the 8 Plus. And now they've added the 10C and the new 10S and then the 10S Plus, even though that's not what they're calling them. So that takes us to 7 models of iPhone. So like when you walk in, it's going to be, you know, the dozen Android phones down one side and the dozen iPhones down the other side. And like that
doesn't
seem better to me.
But I think that's part of, I actually think that is part of what Apple has to do, is because they are one company serving. It's the same thing with Macs, where you have to kind of cover the gamut. Is those Androids, a lot of them are by different manufacturers with different form factors. Now, Samsung does a lot of different form factors as far as, you know, how that goes. And so providing those is kind of giving that a community that doesn't have other choices, the theoretical choices that they want. I think Apple has to, you know, manage the fact that there are some people that are going to want an iPhone that aren't going to want to spend $750 on one, with the fact that that's all they really want you to buy, $750 and up. You know, like that's the, you know, they're being nice with the other ones. And those are very solid phones. I still use a 7, you know, as my international phone, and it's a great phone. So I think that you know, that price dropping down, the new R is 95% the quality of, or maybe 90% the quality of last year's top of the line model for $250 less.
Well, not just that. It is, if I were in the market for a new phone, it would be really hard for me to decide between the iPhone XR and the iPhone XS, because the main differences, the most obvious differences are that, okay, you get aluminum instead of stainless steel. That doesn't affect the use of the phone. It may affect durability, but I don't sit down with a phone in my back pocket. You get an LED screen instead of an OLED screen. OLED is nice, deeper and crisper, but it's not necessary. But they did a really good job with it. You still get edge-to-edge display. You still get those rounded corners. You'll get pretty much the same experience. And if you're upgrading from, if you're not upgrading from an iPhone 10, your previous iPhone was an LED display anyway. And instead of having a telephoto and a wide angle lens as your main shooter, you only have the wide angle lens. But you're getting the same processor as in the super expensive phone. You're getting this. It's only the one wide angle camera, but you're getting the exact same camera. They showed off really wonderful features for changing the apparent focal length. They can either even fake the effect of having those two stereo lenses to compare from. So any picture, ostensibly, until I'm informed otherwise, the impression is that if you take a picture with these two cameras from the same place at the same time, they will look pretty much identical. They went to lots of detail about things that they'd improved and how HDR works, and they made the point that they both work the same way. They made the same improvements to the front-facing cameras, so you get the exact same Face ID, you get the same true-depth camera, you get the same sort of effects you can get with selfies, and so with the less expensive phone, not only do you get what will seem to be the same experience if you're willing to wait a month to be the first one to get it, but you will also get a choice of, you can get a yellow one. You can get a yellow iPhone without having to go to some sort of market in China and have someone replace the back for you. You can get a blue one. You can get all these cool. I'm really going to have to try both of them to see at what point what separates this from a practical, functional upgrade versus just I want the styling of that stainless steel. I want that crisper OLED display, because it looks like functionally these are going to be almost identical experiences.
Yeah, I do think that you're paying. Yeah, I think that the difference between these is probably the closest difference between their higher end phone and their lower end phone they've ever had. You know, where they surgically found the places that cost them the most money, removed those. So the camera and the screen are the two places that they made the biggest cuts. Those aren't operational cuts for many people. You know, most people won't notice the difference between that. I do think you'll see a difference in the portrait mode. While they showed the portrait mode working just fine, you'll notice that a lot of them were pretty smooth edges around the head, either generated or they gave them caps. They gave them lots of things that made that work. So I think that most likely what we're going to do is see what looked like the first generation of portrait mode, which was pretty harsh on curly hair. Whereas I think the two lenses, my daughter has very curly hair. And so the first round of the portrait mode, I was like, wow, this doesn't work. And it's gotten progressively better, but I think that that's going to be the places that, that we're going to see, you know, some of the differences. So for people who really want the absolute best, and for people who really have to have that outer edge of what they're getting, they're probably not upgrading from last year. I don't think that, unless you have a heart condition, I don't see any real reason to upgrade if you got the last watch and the last phone. But there's a super, there's a bubble, you know, a super cycle of people who have not gotten any of those things. So there's a huge opportunity for Apple to do very, very well with these. I think these are solid. The rumors were that the iPhone got pushed, the iPhone of this year got pushed into last year, which is one of the reasons we're seeing so little change this year, because a lot of, that was supposed to be, it was kind of almost an extra from last year, and I'm not sure exactly what the thought process was there, but that's the rumor, and so that's part of why we're only seeing incremental increases this year. But I think that it's a, you know, if you haven't bought a phone in a year, it's probably a good time to upgrade. You're going to get, you've got some great options, whether it's the R or the S. I think you've got some great options in front of you. I do think it will put more pressure on people to get it because you have a $750 one with the front facing, the Face ID, there's going to be a lot of your friends using Memojis, and you're going to be left out in the cold. And, when I send my, I send my wife Memojis, because I've been using the beta, and then she can't send them back. And I'm like, yeah, it's because you have an older phone. I'm sorry, you can't play, So it's not as bad as when you have to talk to someone with green text, but sorry, Andy, it's close, like you're just always like, every time you get green text, you're like, this is going to be hard. It's only going to go to this phone and I'm not going to be able to.
Oh no. Andy's phone supports international standards for messaging instead of having an arbitrary locked in one that can only, sorry.
This is so much easier.
I'm taking away valuable time from Kelly.
Well, okay. So if I extend, if I extend what Alex is saying, which is, that we got a phone last year that was supposed to be this year's phone. Like, if they knew they were going to do the 10 last year, why bother with the 8? Which,
it would have been too much. The 10 by itself would have been, it would have been a huge jump in price. It would have been also a lot of huge jumps there. I think and they probably already had built the 8. The 8 was probably in mass production, and so I think that was probably the reason business reason they made to move it up.
When we talk about how the outsides are always the same, through like three generations of phone, like the 5 and the 5S and the 6, the reason all of the square phones were the same was because like they'd already built all of the mechanisms for that. So we could, we don't have to do any research. Like we can just sort of put stuff in that sort of outside for free.
Well, it's not just that. It's not just for Apple. One of the things that's great about keeping the phone structure the same is also for all the manufacturers
Everybody
making
else.
Cases. I mean, it's a huge deal. Like there's because you get an Android, you have no idea what kind of, I got to get this case. And there's only three cases for this form factor. Whereas with an iPhone, there's generally, because there's so few different choices, there's a lot of cases that you can get.
Yeah. So part of the reason that I'm as aggravated as I am about the name being all different and weird is because it is twofold. Number one, I'm a person who has to explain this to other people. So as soon as we're done here, I'm going to start getting phone calls from people like asking me to explain to them what happened this morning in English. And so when somebody goes into a store and doesn't have a solid understanding of what all the differences are, or a person who can explain to them, like, the one that you really need is this and not so much that one or whatever, it's going to be confusing for that person who maybe doesn't pay as much attention. And, they get the little text message, like, you can come upgrade your phone now. So they go in and now they have all these choices and they don't know what the difference is and they don't know what parts they care about. So, last year when my mother-in-law upgraded, for example, I sent her to an 8 Plus because I'm like, this is, like, for the money that you want to spend, this is the best camera you can get.
Yeah.
In your budget, this is the better camera. You don't want my phone, which is just the 8. You want a plus because you want the better camera because you're going on a big trip and you want to be able to take great pictures. And if you want to ever be able to, you know, print one of those out nicely and have it hang up on the wall or whatever you want to do, then you want to have the best camera you can get because this is going to be your camera. Like, this is the camera you carry around with you. Get the plus phone,
yep.
You know, and then, you know, as a footnote, she's super excited about it because her texts are a readable font size now, you know, because she doesn't have a smaller phone. So, like, for regular folks who just walk in, you know, I'm going to say unsupervised and like don't really know what's going on. They know that the S is the nicer phone and they know that the plus is the bigger phone and neither of those is true anymore. And that's the part that I feel like is just going to be frustrating for consumers who are just going to go, why should I spend $800? Like, I don't even know what I'm getting. I can go over here and get an Android phone for $500.
Yeah.
And be happy with it and whatever. And like, I feel like that's not the best move for Apple.
Yeah, I'm certainly not going to. I want to add a note that I don't want to extend sour grapes. The other way of expressing that exact same confusion I said is that Apple did not decide to charge you more for an iPhone 10 like device that has the most modern processor that has their best camera in it. So I'm glad that while they're keeping the price relatively in the same range. It starts at $749, which they said was less expensive than an iPhone 8 Plus, which is yes. a credible thing for them to say because they're making the point that it actually has, even though it's a little bit smaller than an iPhone 8 Plus, it actually has the same size screen. So that's pretty good. But one other thing that I, while we're talking about cameras, that I really wanted to call out for them that was I noticed and I'm really, really pleased with. Almost all of their demo pictures were pictures of people, including portraits of people. And they pointedly showed off a very, very wide range of skin tones. From not just, I think the only skin tone that was not represented on the entire world skin tone spectrum was like the Conan O'Brien style level of like pasty bluish green white. Other than that, though, you rarely see, for instance, people with very, 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 very dark skin represented. And that's such an important thing for them to show off because so many cameras, whether it's in your phone or whether it's something you're spending $2,000 for, so many of them, they were created by engineers that programmed them to treat like Caucasian skin as normal. And so when you throw very, very dark skin at that sensor, or that image processor, it doesn't know how to handle it properly. And every single picture, no matter from what part of the world this person seemed to come from, seemed very lively skin tones, nicely exposed, nicely balanced. And I can't think that was an accident. I think they were very, very, it must be something they worked very hard on and something they're very, very proud of, justified, I think, too. One thing that I'm not going to be very happy with is that the iPhone 6S, the iPhone SE, and the iPhone 10 are no longer available. And with the death of the 6S and the SE, that means that there is no longer any iPhone you can buy new that has a headphone jack. So the iPhone line is now 100% totally headphone jack free. And not only that, but even if you spend close to $1,500 for the most expensive iPhone ever made, you will not get a free $9 headphone dongle with it anymore because, well, they don't have to explain why. They're already saving your life with that EKG magic watch. Don't complain about the $9 headphone dongle. So definitely the end of an era. I hope this doesn't speak poorly of the chances of having headphone jacks on the next revolution of iPad Pros. Because I really do want to pour out a glass for my analog connector homies or whatever, because that's a sad transition as far as I'm concerned.
I have to admit that I was definitely one of those folks that was very upset about the whole transition, you know, to away from the headphone jack, and even now I have an older phone that I oftentimes use for streaming. So if we're doing an iPhone stream to platforms that require phones, you want professional audio to go into the headphone jack when you put Ethernet through into the Lightning port, and there's no other way to do it. So we still have these older phones that we're using. So I'm definitely very sensitive to that process. I will say though that I finally bought the AirPods, and then I started using the AirPods, and they're spilt so well.
They're, they're lovely. I'm not saying they're not lovely.
I'm saying, but it was like one of those things. Like I was like, this is not going to work. Because I mean, I have really good headphones. You know that I have a variety of wired headphones, and I have a variety of crappy Bluetooth headphones. And so I was very incredulous about the whole thing. And then last week I lost my AirPods somewhere, and I was traveling. I had like 2 hours of sleep and I put it somewhere and didn't, I don't know what happened to them. So anyway, and then I really realized how painful it was, because I suddenly don't have any way to, connect and everything else. And so I still use wired ones. What I did is I just did a preemptive strike and bought like 4 of those little converters. So all my little headphones have converters on them, and I have extra ones in my bag, and I have, you just never know when you're going to need another converter. But I will say that my complaint about the AirPods is that their ability to cut out the outside noise and, and really isolate things is pretty low. And they don't stay in my ears as well as I'd like them to. Like I have Jabra, these Jabra Sports that will actually do a much better job. They don't have the same range and they don't sound quite as good. Oh, they sound better.
They got those silicone tips in there, don't they?
They do. And they have better bass, and they have, they're better bass. They sound better. They just don't cover the same area that the AirPods do. And the AirPods, the big thing about it is even just it's nice having a little case, but there's something about the case. There's something about charging the case and having the thing and them slipping in. And it's so natural. Like at very, very first started setting them down. I set them down somewhere, but it got so used to that little case was in my pocket all the time. And you kind of charge it up. And
I have one of my grandfather's old lighters, and I've never smoked, but I always kept it, partly because it was my grandpa's, but also it's just so satisfying. There's something satisfying about click, 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 and that the case, that AirPod case has the same thing.
And so it was just, there's something about it. It's so well built. It so makes you want to put them back in the case. And the charging is so effortless, and the process of pairing them is effortless. And even I, because I'm switching between my iPad and my phone and my computer and using them in a lot of different ways. And it's they get a little confused when you start. When you only use them with your phone, they're great. When you use them with your phone or your iPad, if your iPad's in your backpack, they'll like prepare to it. You'll be like, I don't understand my phone. It doesn't understand what's going on here. And so I think that I think Apple did a pretty good job, better than they've done in the past, of the transition. So, Apple has been known to just, we're now going on a new track, and you're all going to have to find your way, because, like when you look at the transition on Final Cut Pro is a good example of, we're just going to go to a new thing. There's no training wheels. There's no, like, if you don't like it. In many ways, Apple, I think, did this in a much better way, where they, released something new. They gave you a dongle. They still had another one that was on sale for that you could still use your headphones. And they slowly, this transition, I think Apple is doing better than it has in the past. But I will say that now, I find when I'm wired, I find it to be very, it makes me uncomfortable.
You're making the dongle sound a little bit like the compact spare in the back of your trunk, where we're going to give you this. Now, remember, you could only travel for 40 miles at 50 miles an hour. But we're not going to let you run it for that more longer than that. So we're going to give you this dongle it's only going to be good until you lose it, and you will lose it, at which point we fully expect you to buy AirPods or Bluetooth headphones.
It was one of those things that it took me a long time. I only got the AirPods very recently, like in the last couple months, and I was not going to move to wireless, dang it. and now that I lost them, like I got to go on a big trip tomorrow and I have to go to the Apple store and get a replacement pair, because I just can't I can't bear the idea that I'm going to go on this trip without my AirPods, so they definitely did this transition better to a point, and it really is, like, once you get used to them, it is very difficult to it's very difficult to go back, because you feel very like contained, you keep on pulling your earphones out when you're doing something, and they get caught on stuff, and it's just you forget how you didn't realize how much of a pain in the neck headphones were until I had no headphones that actually work. Because I've gotten Bluetooth systematically for years. Like I get a Bluetooth every year, and I'm like, nope, this one still sucks. You know, like nope, this one still sucks.
And for anybody who wasn't watching the video when Steve Aquino was Skyping in from the back of a car on those way back from the event, if you thought the audio was pretty good, he was using as a speaker and microphone a pair of AirPods. They're really kind of quite amazing.
Yeah,
Kelly, is there anything we're going to take our next break and then go to picks of the week? But Kelly, is there anything that you wanted to say that we haven't said yet about the new iPhones or any of the ridiculousness that we have either created for ourselves or noted in Apple?
Well, one of the things I brought up at the beginning of the show was the lack of iPad. I'm still sort of holding out hope that maybe iPads rate their own event. I don't know, but I don't imagine that what they want to do with the iPad, whatever that may be, is going to be a press release. I feel like it's probably going to require Tim to come out on stage and tell us about it. And if that's the case, then, it probably should happen before Christmas. So I'm still hoping that there's still something that's going to happen there. The thing that I think is interesting about these new phones that are new and exciting, and I don't know if you've heard, but all the phones are new. is that they're all coming with the same dumb original issue teeny little 5-watt charger that has a USB-A port in it. And
good point.
Like, I feel like, you know, I know they have a higher battery capacity. I know that they're capable of fast charging. I know they're capable of wireless charging. I'm not saying you need to pack a Qi charging pad in every box or anything like that, but maybe a USB-C cable and like, show off to with a USB-C charger and maybe show people how much faster they can charge. You know, give people the opportunity to sort of optionally get their feet wet. I feel like that would be a good idea to sort of ease in the USB-C transition for people who don't buy a new computer every year. Like I haven't purchased a new laptop in the last couple of years. And so all my stuff is still USB-A and I have a regular standard issue MagSafe charger. So I don't have to worry about any USB-C stuff. So this would be a really nice way to sort of ease people into the USB-C inevitable transition. You know, as people buy new computers and things like that's something they're already going to have to do. So it would be nice if they would sort of nudge that into standard usage by giving people a really cool charger that charges way faster than the one that they're going to get in the box already. Because now on top of spending $1,000 on a phone, you have to go buy a new charger in order to get anything that's going to do it with any sort of appreciable speed.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I think it's one thing that consistently disappoints me about Apple is that they often just come across as cheapskates. That if someone is spending a minimum of $1,000 on your top of the line luxury stainless steel phone, why not give them a $9 an adapter that they'll otherwise charge $9 for? And doesn't it feel while you're still sort of trembling from the shock of having 2 days later press that buy it now button on a $1,500 phone, isn't it nice when you open it up to see, oh, this isn't that cheap, what looks like could be even a Chinese knockoff 5-watt charger. Here is an actual like 18-watt adapter, so it will actually support fast charging. Doesn't that make you feel like you did invest in the top-of-the-line thing? You're not getting the same thing that, dare I say, the riffraff are using to charge their iPhones with?
I think that the only thing is that my whole ecosystem now, and I'm an anomaly, but my whole ecosystem has USB chargers everywhere. You know, I have this. This is the one that I can't pull it in front of the camera, but see, I just pulled it up by its pieces there. You know, like, but this is these are the plugs that we have. We've got five of them in there, and I won't put a single charger, no matter how powerful it is. I'm not going to give up bag space for a single unit charger. You know, so everything is five USBs, and they're all 2.4, and they're all you know, that's the way. And I buy them and put them in the wall. You know, we just cut holes in one of our tables in our green room to install outlets and USB chargers. You know, so the thing is that I think that it's kind of like, here we're giving you something that's minimally does what you needed to do. We know you're probably not going to like it, but no one should be. No, I'm sorry. I don't think anybody should be carrying around a single, you know, we all have so many devices,
okay, but
whether it's our phone and everything else, like you should just go out and get something that's better because it's never going to work. It's a stupid little single unit piece.
It doesn't even have ports. It doesn't even have two ports. If you were a person with a watch, that power plug is useless to you.
Yeah, you're right. You need five. Five I think, well, ports is the right number. And they're not going to ship that with you, but that's what you should have as an owner of electronic equipment. 5, 2.4
I do, but you know, like ports.
Everybody
you
should.
Could give me two Everybody. Ports. Like, give me an iPad charger form factor, you know, the slightly taller brick.
It just tempts you. It tempts you to avoid the inevitable, which is that you need five USB ports.
Okay,
five. Regular people maybe two. So,
not everybody has that wonderful zoology of power bricks that they've acquired over the past 2 or 3 years. Some of them are upgrading from an inferior phone. I will close by using the dill pickle analogy. Okay. Now, if I get a sandwich like at the cheap sub shop where it costs like $4.50, they wrap it in paper, they shove it to me, and I get it. Okay, that's fine. But there's a coffee shop nearby that makes a wonderful sandwich for $12, $13, fresh cut meat, seasonings, custom mayo and stuff like that. Okay, and they put it in paper in a basket and serve it to me. And there's like a slice. There's like a dill pickle spear in there. Do I want the dill pickle spear? No. Do I eat the dill pickle spear? No. But I feel as though if I'm paying $12 for a sandwich, they're showing me a sign of respect by giving me a dill pickle spear, by saying thank you for not going to that horrible place where the prices are suspiciously low and you're not going to know how this is going to turn out until this thing makes its way all the way through your digestive system. Thank you. Let us show your thanks for your increased taste and your deeper pockets by giving you a dill pickle spear. I feel as though an 18 watt adapter is a dill pickle spear. The people who don't have one, they could certainly use another one. The people who, and if you already have one, again, maybe you have one that you can give to a friend. But in any event, after having spent $1,000 on a phone to get like an actual real charger that is more useful than just simply here are two blades that are connected that connect like with just for all you know the for the size and the weight, you feel like you got these two blades that go right from the outlet via a couple of wires directly into the phone without anything in between them. So that's just my feeling. Give me the damn pickle spear, even if I'm not going to eat it myself.
Yeah, but that's organic waste. You're talking about, like, with me, I open the thing up, I barely even take it out of the box. Like, I have a little box full of all those stupid little chargers that I just kind of throw it into. I'm like, I'm going to use that. You know, and
yep,
so the thing is that this is waste. This is electronic waste that we're not going to use because we know better. We know
what
better.
What's Apple going to give me for returning all those chargers to them?
Five.
Right. Okay, I've got a drawer full of 5 watt adapters because they're of no damn use to me in any way, shape, or form, despite all the different devices I have that charge via USB. However, I am often replacing like really good, like, you know, 10, 20 watt marshmallow power bricks by Anker or by Apple because I use them all the time and I maybe can't find it because I packed it in my suitcase the last time I traveled, but I didn't unpack it. Those are the ones that never get wasted. It's these little rinky dink $5 Pez dispenser style things that I think is the real waste. We will be back with our picks of the week. Kelly, were you informed that once again we need a pick of the week? And can you make something or can you make something up in between then?
I wasn't, but I already have one, so we're good.
Okay, excellent. So we will hear for the last time, not for the last time ever. I'm saying for the last time in this show. Leo, I'm sure, is safe and sound. He is not Instagramming, but Lisa is. So we know that they're safe and happy and well-fed. For our last advertising from Mr. Leo Laporte. Leo.
MacBreak Weekly brought to you by IT Pro TV today. IT Pro TV. Learn IT. Pass your certs. Accelerate your career with IT Pro TV. Recently, Glassdoor compiled a list of the 15 top employers. That includes Google, Apple, that no longer require college degrees. These companies, some of the best companies in tech, are looking at candidates who have hands-on experience either through a coding boot camp or industry-related training like IT Pro TV. That's really good news. If you've been thinking, I can't get a job there, I don't have a degree, no, you can with IT Pro TV. Get the certs employers want, the skills you need for a great career in IT, from CompTIA and Cisco to EC Council. That's that Certified Ethical Hacker cert. I love that. I want that one. VMware. IT Pro TV has you covered with everything you need to launch or grow your IT career. Lots of content, 4,000 hours of binge-worthy on-demand training with new hours added every single day. They have 125 hours a week, 9 to 5 Monday through Friday in their five studios. These guys are amazing and the best teachers who know their stuff. They're content experts. Binge-worthy content because it's fun, it's engaging, and you're really, really learning. It's easy to find the course you need in their catalog. They're listed by category, cert, by job role. And you can watch it anywhere, anywho. They've got apps, of course, on iOS and Android, and Chromecast built into those. They've also got a Roku app, an app for Amazon Fire TV, for Apple TV. You can watch on your web browser, anywhere you are. That makes it really convenient. And if you are managing an IT team and you want to help them get training, you'll love IT Pro TV's Pro Portal. Flexible online training for IT teams of all sizes. The portal lets you keep track of what's going on. The training schedule, results, logins, viewing time, courses viewed, tracks completed, all that stuff. Keep your team's skills up to date with interactive training they'll really enjoy. Engaging hosts present information in a talk show format. They even got a chat room going like we do. September 18th is coming up. You know why that's important? It's National IT Professionals Day. Hallelujah. We're going to get Russell a cake. Celebrate. Maybe you've got somebody in your life, a kid, a spouse, a friend, who's looking for a great, engaging job, who loves tech. Celebrate National IT Professionals Day with an IT Pro TV subscription. Join the more than 100,000 members who are learning and having a great time at IT Pro TV. Here's how. Go to itpro.tv/MacBreak. You can, by the way, learn about the team solution there and request a free demo. Or you can sign up for individual membership. This would be a good thing to give a kid just coming out of high school or college. What a great gift. And a very affordable free 7-day trial at itpro.tv/MacBreak. If you sign up with the offer code MacBreak30, you'll get 30% off the subscription as long as you stay active forever for the lifetime of the subscription. So how does that break down? Well, standard subscriptions are normally $570 a year. You use the offer code MacBreak30, you'll pay $399 a year. That beats a technical school. And by the way, the training beats a technical school too. It's binge-worthy content, flexible training, life-changing results. itpro.tv/MacBreak. And don't forget that offer code, MacBreak30. Now back to the show.
Thank you, Leo. Okay, time for our picks and or tips. Let's start with Alex.
So by the way, just to reiterate, in fact, six, this is the one that I carry around. This is made by Anchor. I think it's called a PowerPort 6. If you're buying one of these, now that you've heard the show and we've talked about the fact that you should throw away that little single one or give it to your friends or give it to charity or whatever.
Use them as Christmas decorations. I got like 9 Christmas of them on my tree this year.
Exactly. Stick them all together, and it's like a geeky erector set. So, but once you start doing it, you know, 5 or 6, you should make sure that they're all 2.4s, and it has to have a light. So, by the way, no matter how cool it looks, if it doesn't have a light, you won't know whether whatever you're plugging into at the airport is actually powering it. So, make sure that it has a light. That's my little thing. You don't have to buy an Anchor one. I have an Anchor one. That's what I gotta say.
I do too.
That's not my pick. That's not my pick. My pick is this. It's made by Wero. This is the cutest little thing. So check this out. It's like $9.
Oh, yep.
So yeah. Look at that guy. That's a black one. And see, but you just drop it in here. See if you look at it here, you get the little. It charges. It won't charge now because it's not plugged in. But it charges it. So you just plug your little guy in here, and you have it sitting on your desk, and it works so well. I bought it. I don't know where I saw it. I was like, oh, that looks really funny. So I put it on, and the funny thing about it is that I often knock my watch around and pop it off of its magnetic. Thing. I'm not a big fan of the magnet. And so being able to stick it in there and know it's going to kind of stay in there while I'm doing stuff is great. And it looks cool. And it just gives you a place to just kind of throw your watch in. And so I don't wrap my watch around that. I just literally just drop it in there and let it charge. But there's something about it that calls to you to charge your watch when you come in the morning. And so anyway, that's my pick. It's cute.
Now that the new Apple Watches are like a little bit bigger, are they going to have to like come up with a new version of that styled to look like the Apple, like the Mac TV?
I don't know. It's pretty bendy, so I think that you'll still be able to slide it in there. I don't think you'll need to upgrade it for the new watch.
That doesn't sound like the design motif of someone who paints the side of the fence you can't see, Alex.
Exactly. There's that. What was I thinking?
I will gladly buy a new one to upgrade my watch stand if it turns out that my Series 4 doesn't charge. In that, Alex, when you held that up and you said, I don't know where I saw it. I'm like, it was my Twitter feed, Alex.
it might have been your Twitter feed. It was probably your Twitter feed that I saw it. I was just like, oh, this is great.
I've posted more than one picture of it. I adore it. I bought, as soon as I bought it, I've put a bunch of pictures up about it because I think it's super duper cute. And it's just the right mix of old school and new school because it charges an Apple Watch. But it looks like, an SE, and I love it so much. It makes me so happy. And the footnote to that is I do want to point out to people that you have a nice short Apple Watch charger cord on there. I have one I carry around in my battery because, again, original Apple Watch. So I carry around my battery pack, not for my phone, but in order to charge my watch. So I bought one of those little short cables and it comes in super handy. The thing that I have to point out is another can be useful, but is also mostly fun, sort of a utility. And this is a Kickstarter. And before I tell you anything about it, I'm going to give you full disclosure. This is by Victor Agreta, who was the editor-in-chief at the unofficial Apple weblog for many years. And so technically, I used to work for him back in the day when I wrote for Tua, when there was still Tua available to people. So this is a thing that Victor put together, and it's called Kitten Things Done. It makes me so happy. It's a Kickstarter, and he's built this deck of cards, and you use it sort of on top of your existing management system for however it is that you accomplish what you accomplish in your 24-hour units of time. And so you have 30 minutes for lunch and things for planning and things for mail and different stuff. And play those throughout the day. It's a little bit of a gamified system, and you play the cards throughout the day in order to make sure that you're on track with the stuff that you need to do and continuing to accomplish the stuff that you need to accomplish. And I think it's adorable. He's got a load of different people who all did different art for the cards, which is super great. I also like that he's got cards for flex time, or you can always, if you get to a point in your day when you're like, I just don't know what I need to do, you can pull out a card and, at random, and it's like, okay, spend half an hour on email or whatever. And you build your deck however it is that you need to have it. And I enjoy the idea of it. I think all of the cards are adorable. I love the artwork. And it seems like a really reasonable goal that he has set for the fundraising, because it's a $6,000 goal and it's already at $1,200 right now. And one of the things that I like about it is that part of the money goes to pet rescue, specifically cat rescue and cat support charity. So as an added bonus, you can sort of do something good for kittens in the world. And I think that's pretty great. So that's my pick.
Great. Mine is more of a tip than anything else, and this certainly not because I was working so hard today I forgot to get a pick ready. But okay, look, if you got anything that uses rechargeable batteries like my camera here, obviously you should have a whole bunch of them, and so that you can have one charging back in the hotel room while you're out gallivanting with the other one, or while you're shooting at everything and everything while you're out without having to worry about having to change. However, I unfortunately was a couple. So I have three or four of these, and it was a couple years before I realized it was important to do this, which is to put some sort of mark on each one of them so that you know which one is which. You might guess that my first three were called Mo, Larry, and Curly. I bought a fourth one this year. Now that one's called Shemp, because it's important to know. So give something memorable that you're going to remember, so that you know when you in the middle of the day when you're looking for another fresh battery, you know that, oh no, Larry, I've already burned through Larry. Shemp is the one I haven't used yet. Or as you're mixing and matching, as you acquire new and old batteries, you know that, oh, okay, Curly is is a 4-year-old battery, been recharged and charged like 1,000 times. It's all I really want Shemp, because Shemp is the one I just bought 2 months ago. If I leave the house with just Shemp, Shemp will carry me through the entire day. If I leave the house with Curly, I'm going to need at least Larry or Mo to back it up as well as that. And the simplest damn thing, I mean, one of the nicest things I ever bought for myself was a professional label maker like this in one of those Brother P Touch deals. And yes, you will go nuts labeling each individual piece of fruit inside the fridge, and each individual egg, because it's just like, it's almost like a chainsaw in terms of organization. Once you use it for the thing that you bought it for, you want to find other things to use it on, because it's just too fun to use it on.
We have a lot of labelers.
Go ahead, Alex.
I was gonna say we label a lot of things, and the P Touch is kind of our standard one. I have a different one that metal does on metal, but it's, I can't remember what the name of it is, but the P-Touch one is what we use for almost everything we have. But the funny thing about batteries, as a note, the Canon batteries, so they have a little piece of plastic that you usually lose pretty quickly that clicks onto it. It took me years to realize that there's a little box in that little safety thing that if you put it on one way, it shows the battery in the print on the battery. If you turn it the other way, it doesn't show the battery. So, and it's there literally so that once you've used it, you turn it over and plug it in. And someone showed it to me. I was like, what? What? You know, like mind blown. Like I was always like, it didn't even occur to me. Like, why is there a little square there? You know, the square's there so that you put it on the other way when you take it out of the camera so that you don't use it again. And you know how many you have. And it was just like, the only thing I'd say about the label, the one thing we learned with the Canons, by the way, also is always put the label on the top. Because if you put it on the side, it gets stuck in the camera, and then you need a thing to pull it out.
Yeah. So footnote to the P-Touch conversation is that stuff at my house is also labeled with a silver Sharpie, because you can take a silver Sharpie and you can write on all those weird black power adapters that don't. Yes.
There you go.
That don't say anything helpful on them.
That, like, by the way, I'm not really into regulation, but let me tell you, you should be legally required to print on your power supply
what voltage and wattage it is. Preach. Yes,
I have crates, and I kid you not, I'll post a picture at some point. I have crates of unmatched power supplies. Like I don't know if they're still useful or not. You know, like they're in there where you're afraid of throwing away because you don't know when you're gonna need them.
Well, because not everything says, like, I bought this with a Netgear router and the power brick says Netgear on it. Maybe it does. Maybe it doesn't. You don't know. And like a lot of stuff that you get doesn't have the same name, so you can't even narrow down. Like, I know this powers some Logitech thing I bought. Like, you can't even get that far. It doesn't say anything useful on it. So usually what happens is the minute I get one, I whip out the silver Sharpie and I scribble on it, like, it goes to this whatever. And then at least from there, like, sometimes I can go put on, you know, an actual label for whatever it is, you know, if it turns out to be something, you know, in particular. But for the most part, at least I make sure that there's some indicator on that of what the heck it goes to.
Yeah. Yep. And also because you never know what I might throw out like an old Wi-Fi router, but I will keep the AC adapter just in case I need something that needs that kind of power. So that's why I will also use that metal marker to label this is 12 volts and 2 watts, so that if I'm trying to find something that fits this plug that is exactly 12 volts and 2 watts, mm-hmm. I don't have to go, why do they write things in gray on a black background at that size? It's almost that's as if they worse. Don't want me to use this.
But, well, even, we got like we got into
worse.
Go ahead.
That was all. Yeah, it's when they do it in gray on a black power adapter.
Yes, thank you, Apple.
Yeah, and it's amazing how many versions. We got into the long discussion one time because we were trying to really sort our cables out. Of there's the outer diameter, the inner diameter, and you have to keep track of those. And there's the amps and the voltage. And then there's, for us, is it an English plug or is it a UK plug? I mean, or mm-hmm. American plug, UK plug, European plug. And so there's all these like iterations, and it makes it very hard to sort because there's too many places. Like you need so many shelves, you know, of which there may only be two, and then some of them have 40, and you know, it's just very, very bitter.
Okay, before we get into a religious war about power adapters and nomenclature, we should say goodbye for this episode of Mac Break Weekly. Alex Lindsay, the Pixel Core, thank you very much for participating in the Gala Apple iPhone event edition of
Thank you.
Mac Break Weekly. Kelly Guymont, Kelly Gamont. I'm sorry. I was tripping over Guy or Guh. So I know it's Gamont.
Well, your first attempt was a lot closer than a lot of people get, so it's totally fine.
Thank you very much. As a member of the No One Pronounces My Name Correctly Club, I should be more considerate. What would you like to plug quickly? Because I gotta go.
App Camp for Girls, as always.
App Camp for Girls, App Camp, as always.
Number4girls.org. You should go there and check out what we do. And you can always find me online in lots of places as Verso, primarily on micro.blog. And you can always ask me questions there about why I think Empire is the best Star Wars movie, which I said earlier, all the way down to why am I mad about Apple names and everything in between. So.
And I am Andy Anatko. If you can spell my last name, which I doubt you can, you can see my stuff on Instagram or on Twitter, which usually has links to other things you can read and see about me. But that's going to be it for Mac Break Weekly this time. Hope you see you again next week when we're going to have another and our last substitute guest host for the vacationing Leo Laporte. Till then, break time is over. Come on, you gold bricks.